If you've got a kid with educational challenges, how do you get the most out of your IEP at school? We've got educational therapist Karina Mamoun to give us the answers today on Driven by Purpose.
This is Driven by Purpose, a show about finding your purpose, building fulfilling careers, and helping people with disabilities live better lives. Hosted by three men who've lived it and are here to help you do the same. Special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Clean Logic, a leading bath and skincare company and a true pioneer in creating inclusive workplaces and increasing employment opportunities for people with disabilities.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Driven by Purpose. My name is Evan Rosenblum, along with the co-founder of Clean Logic and the Inspiration Foundation, Isaac Shapiro. What's going on, Isaac?
Hey, Evan.
We're still missing our third guy here, Mike, who is on special assignment, but don't worry, he'll be back. And because he's got very important stuff to do. But while he's gone, we've got a very important guest today. A very important guest who spent her entire career advocating for kids with learning challenges to receive the services that they require and are owed, which can be a very hard thing to get. And I know this because I have a daughter who's 10 who requires assistance and services. And I know from experience that it is not easy to get those services sometimes. But let me tell you, she needs these services and they're very beneficial. And I have seen how important they are when she gets them and they're done the right way. So without further ado, educational therapist, Karina Mamoun, everybody. Karina, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are doing great. And I'm so excited to talk to you because as people in our world know, when it comes to IEPs and services for kids with learning challenges, like, it is so, so important that kids receive the services that they need, they're entitled to. And we know that you've spent your career and your life advocating for these kids. But before we get into like the tips and the tricks and how to go about getting everything that they are entitled to getting, I'd love to hear about you and your journey. And you know, people like you are special, and I want to know why you picked this career, how you got started, and like, what point in your life were you like, this is the path for me? What touched you and made you think this is the road I need to go down?
Well, I've always loved working with children. I think that, you know, children are really special. And throughout my education and career, I've always worked with children. I became really interested in just becoming an advocate for children and their families, because I know that they often get don't receive the services that they deserve. And especially for parents, it can be quite an intimidating process.
Yeah.
And I work with children young as preschool all the way through high school. And I just knew it was my calling, and I just really like to make a difference. And it's rewarding. And I know that I'm making a difference.
So when you, what was your first job? Like, were you in this field? Like, what was the first job that you took?
I was an educational therapist. I started working in Los Angeles.
Oh.
In South Los Angeles. So I worked with a lot of disadvantaged families, which really needed a lot of guidance and support. I also have a master's degree, and I've been in this field for over 19 years.
Wow.
And I also have multiple certificates in early childhood intervention, dyslexia remediation, and attention and memory.
So when you were going through the school district and you were trying to get services for your child, you meet with an IEP team through your school district, and you meet with a team, and you guys all discuss what services your child should have and how the school district can accommodate. And you come up with a plan together. And sometimes it can go really well and everybody's on the same page, and sometimes it can go not so well. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, I've been on both sides of those. I've been on the sides mm-hmm. where everybody's like, this has been great, and your daughter needs this, this, and this, and it's all going to be great, and she gets this, and everybody comes out smiling and high-fiving, and we're like, this is great. And then she gets those services, and throughout the year, we see so much improvement, and everybody's happy, and it's great. Then there are times where it feels like you are fighting a war and nobody's on the same page. And it feels just like it's a fight. And it feels like us versus them. And it feels like you want to advocate for your child. And it feels like the school district is just fighting you on everything. And you just, like, I'm sure you've seen this before, Karina, where it's just like, as a parent, you're like, this seems so obvious for me. She needs these services. Why won't the district just approve and give these services? Right. For us, it ended up in litigation where we ended up suing the school district. And I know that happens more often than it should. So I guess my first question to you is, how can these situations, what is your advice for parents on keeping it so it's more friendly than adversarial?
Well, I think it's really important for parents to become familiarize themselves with the law and document everything so that they have a thread of everything that they requested. So let's say, for example, you have a child that's struggling with reading, right? And they're not making the progress that you'd like them to have or that they should be making. So that's when you should request an evaluation from the district, from the school. And it really depends because let's say the child is going to a public school, then you request it from the school. But if a child goes to a private school, then you might need to request it from the district. But every request that you make must be in writing. So now we have email, thank goodness. Before you had to, send a certified letter, but now through email, just request everything in writing. There are certain laws that state that, for example, in New York, from the moment you request an evaluation, the district has 60 days to complete the evaluation. And so I would really encourage parents to document everything in writing, to not be, to be professional and friendly with the staff, with the faculty, with the teachers. And I think usually, as you mentioned, sometimes it goes well and sometimes it doesn't. But I think that sometimes you might want to consult with an advocate or a lawyer so that they can also guide you, because it can be quite intimidating. And I've also been in numerous IEP meetings where it's, I just don't understand why they're just not looking out for the best interests of the child.
Yeah.
Can I maybe just back it up one bit here? Because this is new to me in terms of what I've heard about there. And this even happened to me as a child when, I wasn't top performing because I didn't start in the school district. And the first thing they said, your son needs to go to a special needs program and doesn't belong here. So I know a little about this, but it was my parents advocating for myself. But Karina, what it sounds like is you're kind of almost like there's this lawyer piece. You talked about the word war. Karina, what I loved about you as a guest for our audience, and again, we're about driven by purpose, you not only are working for the schools, but you also have your own business. Why did you want to go and do more work outside of your normal school hours to help, with this?
Take on more work.
More work. And you guys are using lawyer and war. And I'm like, whoa, that sounds like a lot of work. So Karina, why even go the extra mile for what you're doing, and what drove you in that purpose to do? How long have you had your own business, by the way?
Oh gosh, almost 19 years.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about that and what drove you there, because it sounds like it's a really, really important piece, because it doesn't make sense why schools don't take, that's why we send to school. That's why we pay taxes. So why are they not taking care of you? But talk about you for a little bit, because I think that's important for our audience to understand this advice you're giving. It's coming from someone that's doing it in the school and outside the school to help families.
Well, sometimes what schools provide, it might not be enough for students, right? They may really need a more frequent remediation, more, repetition. And what the school may offer is just not enough. And I really feel that it's important for students to have people or to work with people that really understand how they learn and understand that they are able to learn. They just might have to learn differently. And I'm equipped with different strategies and skills to help to basically meet the individual needs of each child. So what I do, it's not like a you know, the same thing for every child. I really take into account their interests, their strengths, their educational needs, and really try to tailor a remediation plan to address their need.
You put the I in the IEP.
Yeah. And when working with young children, it's also important to make it fun and engaging, and like play games, and they love it. So I think it's really important to have someone who has the specialty in really working with children who just learn differently.
Isaac, I think Karina just hit like such a huge point, right? Because the school districts, they deal with, you know, there's so many kids, and it's like they're not, the staff at these schools, there's not a lot of people. And so they have to deal with so many IEPs, right? Where you really see success is when you tailor the IEPs to the kids, and you find out what motivates each individual kid. And you really spend the time to get to know each kid and how to motivate and get the best out of each kid. But when you're dealing with such a high volume of these cases, sometimes it's hard, right? So people like you that are taking the time to really drill down with each kid and find out how do I get what's the best combination of services and the best like therapy or whatever it is for each kid. Without it, they can get lost a little bit, and it makes it more difficult. And sometimes just a little bit of extra tender love and care from somebody like Karina makes a huge difference in their trajectory. And I've seen it. I've seen it with kids that have learning challenges. They just get a little extra boost, a little extra care. It's like, you find out they just need this or this, and it just helps them take off in a different direction. I'm sure you've seen a million different examples of that, Karina.
Exactly. I think it's really important to create a really nurturing and warm environment where students are allowed to make mistakes so that they don't feel judged. And what I always say to them is to, you know, it's okay to make mistakes because we learn from our mistakes, and then we identify where things went wrong and just learn from that. But I think it's really important for children to have that space where they can be themselves and not feel completely judged. And sometimes, once again, at the school setting, they may be in a group setting, right? Because the schools can't always accommodate all the needs of the students because there's so many. And so many kids have so many different needs. So, you know, coming to someone like me where I individualize and provide a very nurturing and warm environment where we focus on the individual needs of the child, I think that really makes a difference.
How do you see that field, you know, on the larger scale? Is it a growing field? Because I feel like there's been more of a focus on that overall. I mean, I'm in it, so maybe I'm not seeing like the larger scale, but it certainly feels like there's more effort to concentrate on kids with learning disabilities or learning challenges getting the help they need, where before maybe they were just kind of trying to push them through the system. Does it feel like there's more people, more educational therapists entering the field, giving the kids the help that they need? Is this a growing field, is I guess what I'm trying to get at?
I mean, it is, because there's often a comorbidity in learning differences, meaning that let's say a child has dyslexia, but they also have attention deficit or, you know, attention and focus challenges. So, you know, that's the other piece to the work that I do. You know, it's also addressing not just, for example, dyslexia, but there's also it's usually accompanied with executive functioning, which means, you know, planning, organization, time management, prioritizing. So I think that, I think we are becoming more aware, and it is more, it's almost like the norm where a lot of students have a lot of learning challenges, and it's okay. And part of my job is to empower them to advocate for themselves as well, to say, this is how I learn, this is what I need. And that way they can, you know, eventually the ultimate goal is for them to become independent, successful, and confident learners.
Can I ask a question here?
Sure.
For a little clarity? Because again, I'm a little bit, this is new to me. So when you think about this, because you're talking about this, so as you keep going, I'd just love for you to maybe put this in here. If for parents that are starting this IEP process, what do you wish they knew before they start? So when they're coming in, is there something you can, as you're talking about this, like that they could be doing and you wish from a school side, or even if they're coming to you for help, what are some of those things that you wish they knew when they start, or you could help with this? Because that's our job, to be a resource.
Do you mean to start the IEP process?
Yeah, yeah. So like, what do you wish they knew, like as parents? Like, because like you said, I heard a little bit, know the law. Well, that's not something I'm going to do, but is there any, like, oh yeah, I'm going to go like, well, the school should tell me, I'm paying taxes, you tell me what I got to do. But it really does sound like you got to advocate. So what else can parents, what do they need to be preparing themselves when they come talk to schools and trying to get into this IEP process, excuse me.
schedule a meeting with the teachers. That's number one. Address their concerns and request an evaluation right away. I think parents are really know their kids better than anyone, right? And if you suspect that your child is not reading at grade level, or is having some speech problems, or you know, speech or anything, vision, then I would say, don't be shy to ask for services. Don't be shy to request extra help. And once again, document everything. Even though you may speak to a teacher, don't just rely on that conversation. Make sure you follow up with that teacher and CC the principal, the school psychologist, and just say, oh, as per our conversation, we, you know, I requested an evaluation to address my concerns for my child, and to also, you know, document and include all your concerns, not just maybe one. Like, let's say the child is having reading challenges. You can include the attention and focus challenges, writing, reading comprehension, everything, so that when they do evaluate the child, they can either provide a psychoeducational evaluation or a neuropsychological evaluation.
I think that's important to say, because I think what I've learned a lot in the blind and visually impaired community, a lot of issues that I've heard from nonprofits that are serving young children is that the parents were in denial and they waited years, whereas they could have gotten it early. So do you see, I think what you said, you didn't say it, but like, you got to get in. But like, I've heard that in the blind community, the young, you know, these young children are hurt by the parents in denial. Is that something you're seeing in this as well?
No,
learning challenge?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because you're absolutely right. Many parents are in denial and they wait way too long before, you know, a child, you know, receives an evaluation or is evaluated or receives services. But once again, a parent knows their child pretty well. And if they suspect something, they should say something. But yes, absolutely, parents are often in denial and they might wait till a child is in high school. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
I worked with a student. Since freshman year, I noticed that he processed information differently, which affected his ability to perform well on tests, because it took him longer, right, to process information. And he always ran out of time. And I've been telling him, and I also spoke to his parents about getting him evaluated. And now he's a senior and he's going to be evaluated. So they should have followed through and maybe, follow my suggestion so that the student couldn't be struggling all through high school, right?
Yeah.
And especially during high school, when you're talking about standardized testing, like the ACT or the SAT, it's really beneficial for students who require that accommodation of extended time to have that extended time, such as time and a half or double time, so that they can perform as well as their peers that don't have learning challenges.
Well, I think you both hit on something great. I mean, it's a great point, and that is that this is like a stigma attached to having help. Help is a good thing. And it shouldn't be looked at as like, oh, my kid's a failure or he's less than because he or she needs some kind of therapy or this or that or whatever. No, you are doing a good thing. You are actually preparing your kid for success by getting them the help and services that they need. You're doing a good thing by getting them those resources. You shouldn't look at it as like shame or a failure or they're less than. No, you're doing a good thing. Look at it a bit, just a sports metaphor. If your kid's playing baseball and you want them to like be a pitcher and they're not throwing the ball real hard, you go in and you get them like a pitching coach to like help them improve their mechanics. Like you wouldn't look at them as like, oh, they're a failure because they're not throwing like a crazy fastball. If you get them help and all of a sudden they improve and they're throwing faster, you'd be like, oh, cool. They were throwing a great fastball, but then I got them a pitching coach and they were throwing a little bit faster. You'd be like, that's awesome. Pat on the back. I got him the help he needed. It should be looked at the same way with educational services. If they need a little bit of help, you get them the help that they need and that they improve. Pat yourself on the back as a parent for getting them the help that they or she, he or she need, right?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that parents, you know, as you mentioned, should not be ashamed of anything. They should encourage the students, their children, to say, okay, this is how I learn. This is what I need. And that really boosts their confidence. And it could carry them throughout college, right? High school, college, especially when they go away to college, they have to advocate for themselves, right? So I think it's really important that parents think of if they sense that they're ashamed, then the child's going to be ashamed because children feed off of our energy, right? But if you discuss it and talk about it, like it's just really, yes, this is how they learn differently. It's not a big deal. Then the child is not going to have that shame as well, because we do transfer what we feel into our children.
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
Great stuff, Crane. Yeah. I love just what we're talking about in terms of, you know, it starts with young children. And like I said, we're seeing advancements in how people see disabilities as part of, you know, the world of accessibility for all. So I think the work that you're really helping our young children to be independent. We had Dr. Kirk Adams on at a prior show, you know, and talking about how his parents, like, you know, he gave the three success criteria in the blind community of what makes a successful blind person and what they grew up with. And so this, I think there's got to be applicable across any child. So,
but also people like you that take an interest in finding out how to help kids with some learning difficulties and figuring, it's like a puzzle. Like, how do I figure out where the deficiencies are and how to solve them so that they can be better in the long run? Like people like you that take the time to figure that out and put in the effort. It's amazing. And, you know, thank you. As somebody whose kids have benefited from people like you, experts like you, I just want to say thank you, because people like you don't get the credit that they should, that they deserve and they should get. So thank you very much. Thank you, Karina. Yep. I appreciate you.
Thank you for saying that.
You're an incredibly important part, and we appreciate you. So thank you for the good work that you do. And look, this is going to do it for us here at Driven by Purpose. Remember, when I tell you at the end of every episode, tell a friend and tell a friend and tell a friend, like, subscribe, share, comment, all that good stuff. We have more great stuff for you in store next episode. Don't be a stranger. We will see you next time. Driven by Purpose. Mike will be back. That's only a half promise, because we think he's going to be back, unless he gets stuck in customs. Hopefully he'll be back. See you next episode, everybody.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye, everybody.